Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
And you told me not to drive, but I made it home alive. So you said that only proves that I'm insane. You may be right, I may be crazy.
What we will be doing is we will be going for once a week service. The bills will actually be, if you decide you do not want to opt in, your bill will actually be dropping to about to $24.99 is what we're proposing to the council. And if you are opting in, you'll be charged $32.99. We can get you exact to the penny numbers, but we're charging $27 and change right now.
The mayor finally rolling out something that the city council is going to have to officially approve next week. I'm sure they will. But when they approve it, there will be a finally recycling option in the city of Pensacola after, gosh, how long has the recycling program been paused? Like a year. And I know some people blame the mayor and say it's his fault for not being able to recycle. And I say, well, no, you're bad at it. Just, you know, not you necessarily. I mean, you know, Jim and Sally and Benjamin and Fiona, you might be great at it. The problem is that Kenny and Jenny and Martha and Tom, I'm just random names out of my hat, are bad at it. And they put garden hoses in the recycling, and they put styrofoam in the recycling, and they put old greasy pizza boxes in the recycling. And they, you know, the problem is not you necessarily. The problem is whoever. And there's a contamination rate. And because of contamination, then when ECUA gets the recycling at the, you know, the MRF, the materials recycling facility, they look at it and they're like, no. And then you have to pay extra and a penalty, and it goes to the dump. And what? So we don't have recycling. So now what they're doing is they're going to get, you know, some pretty hefty contribution subsidies from, for example, businesses that are able to kind of check off of their list. Look, we're green. Recycling is a green thing. You know, look, we're green. And so that money comes in and, you know, helps subsidize some of the promotion and advertising and education to try to get people to actually do it better. That keeps the cost down. But yeah, you're still going to have to pay something for recycling. And so the question is, well, how much? Well, as the mayor said, it's going to drop a little bit for people who want no recycling to just get a single can once a week. It's going to go up if you want to have a single can once a week plus recycling.
If you recall, we've actually delayed the set increases already approved by council. In the previous administration, there was already set increases that were going to take place. And so we've actually paused two of those increases. So technically, by council action, we should be somewhere in the $29 range. We'll get that exact number to you, $29.31, something like that.
And the reason that's important is that it's going to look like a big cost increase to get recycling and a mild cost savings to avoid recycling and just go with one can once a week. But the reality is they have not put in the already previously approved increases, so you're already not paying what you should have been paying. And they did that because they didn't think that it was appropriate to put in the price increase when the service was in flux. The problem is that having given you a break for a couple of years or a year on that service price increase means that it's going to look like a big jack up when they put recycling on. And it's not. And so from a PR perspective, this is going to look bad. Worse than it is, because they kind of have been nice for a while. And oh, by the way, haven't been collecting that revenue for a while either, which they're not going to get any credit for PR wise.
You look at $24.99, you can't look at it against $27. You got to look at it where the rate is actually supposed to be. But I didn't feel good when I promised the citizen we were going to bring back recycling. What I didn't want to do is raise their bill first before I did what I said I was going to do. So we had paused those increases and ultimately lost that revenue until we got this up and going. So
what you're currently paying, if you're a city resident, city of Pensacola resident, you're currently paying $27.44, okay? I know some of the numbers in the radio, okay? I actually have a chart. I'm going to put it up on the Facebook page. You can see it for yourself. But you're currently paying $27.50. I'm going to round for simplicity's sake. You're paying $27.50. You're going to pay $24.99. And Earl Shives can paint that barn. But you're going to pay $2.50 less. What you should already be paying is $31.47. So you're already getting a $4 a month discount. And if you only want to have one can once a week, you're actually going to go down $6.50. from what you would have been paying if he hadn't put the pause in. You follow? And that's going to then go up to 26.75 in a year, and then it's going to go up to 27.5 in a year because the price of things is high. I mean, and there's a cost involved in all of this stuff, and those costs keep going up. So they're putting a graded schedule into it's going to go up. If you want recycling, again, you're currently paying $27.50. It's going to go up to $33. And that feels like a $4.50 increase. But you're supposed to be paying $31.50 already. So it's only $1.50 increase. But it's going to feel like a big jump. And then that's going to go up to $35 from $33. And then it's going to go up to $35.50. And so, yeah, I think that a lot of people are going to hear this news and they're going to be like, what the? It's going to work bad for the mayor, even though actually the cost is going down if you want to not recycle or don't think you're capable or don't want to pay for it. And it's going to go up a little if you're recycling because, again, I agree with him. The baseline should be what it should have been already, but we have, you know, kind of temporarily had this relief in place, but it's not. And also, he can't fully formally make the big announcement yet because, of course, the city council has to sign off on it. So you're going to get a massive amount of mail and instructional and advertising material hit after next Thursday when they finally approve it, of course, pending that they actually approve it.
We're aiming to begin the once-a-week garbage collection and recycling the week of July 14th is what we're looking at now. You'll see a ton of mail, but we don't want that mail to hit before the ordinance has been approved. So our only delay now is just making sure that we don't have things hitting people's mailboxes that gets changed by the council if they have any concerns.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think that's an appropriate deference to city council. You don't want to send out all the mailers and then council's like, you know, Charles Bear raises some question like, I don't think we can do this. And then the council goes with him and then you're like, okay, so all that money got wasted and the dates have to be changed. You know, so that's appropriate. Other issues that the city is dealing with. There's a lot. I thought this was the most surprising and I don't disagree. Okay. But it was a really interesting thing for the mayor to say in his press conference yesterday, talking about parks funding. You know, the city of Pensacola has what? It's 93, 94, somewhere in that vicinity. It's not 100, but it's more than 90 parks that they maintain. And John, do parks maintain themselves for free?
No, they don't.
Okay. Are they expensive to maintain?
They are very.
Very expensive to maintain. So we love our parks. I say we. I don't live in the city, okay? If you live in the city, you pay for it. I don't pay for it. But, you know, we love our parks, okay? And yet, parks are expensive. And if it's got infrastructure like playground equipment or, say, a giant boardwalk that goes down the side of a hill like Bay Bluffs Park, those things cost even more to maintain and then to replace. And so it's a very, very expensive proposition to have a lot of parks. I would say, I'm not a city resident, again. I think Pensacola has too many parks. But nobody wants to go up to their park. Right? You love the parks. And you think, well, we pay extra. Yeah, and you get premium police and premium fire and premium parks. And at a certain point, maybe you're not paying enough premium to get your premiums, right? That's the issue. So the mayor says,
the reality is there is not a sustainable budget sitting on our lonesome that will be able to maintain the parks that we all expect them to have. And we're no different than any other city, any other county in Florida or in the country. If we expect that we're going to have enough tax dollars to keep the parks the way all of us want them to be kept consistently, it's just not going to happen. And so we've got to look at the outside.
That's a pretty candid admission that we cannot afford our parks. If we're going to keep our parks, we're going to have to find a way to pay for it. One thing they have been doing already, like, for example, with Bay Bluffs Park, is seek, you know, conservation status for the land and then grants in order to construct whatever's going to actually happen there. It's kind of hung up at state agency level right now.
We've done that so far with grants. You know, a lot of the big construction projects we're talking about were money that was not out of the city. It was grant funded. So we've been able to make some progress that way.
Yeah, make somebody else pay, which is still usually us, indirectly. Us through the state, us through the feds, or, you know, it can be foundations and things that are established that are charitable organizations that is through private money or private public cooperative money. It's not always, you know, making taxpayers pay. Again, with the recycling thing, companies are paying, which means that you pay indirectly because every time you buy a can of Coke, a little bit of that goes into the green promotion fund that Coca-Cola is part of, one of the agencies, they're one of the companies, that they go to subsidize local efforts to enhance recycling. So you do pay, you just pay not through a tax, you pay through, you know, the price of the products that you buy. But he brought up a very interesting suggestion, which is, if it's not going to be grants and it's not going to be tax collections, how could you pay for parks? And at this point, if you're a big parks fan, you're thinking, oh, crap, admission prices, user fees, paid parking. No. Not yet. and no indication that that's coming either. You know, I mean, you know, look, if you can charge parking downtown, you could charge parking at a park. I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying that all these things are potential if you've got to raise the money. He's not saying that. Okay, please don't report this as, Andrew said the mayor's going to put paid parking into parks. Well, if you use the boat ramp. Anyway, back to what he's actually proposing.
I could see in the foreseeable future, I don't know when, but some idea of a parks foundation where, you know, hey, people that want to say, hey, I'm willing to do more. And we actually have little examples of that. We've got some downtown folks for a long time that have put money into the flower beds on Palafox, for example, and helped, you know, keep those clean and all that. They don't have to do that. But that's a group of people just saying, hey, we wanted to have a beautiful downtown. So there's little nooks and crannies of that type of philanthropy happening in the city where someone calls us and says, we care about this and we want to invest our money. So maybe having a more cohesive, streamlined approach to doing that would be an interesting thing to look into long term.
So the idea is to create a charitable foundation through which people, if they want to, can contribute to helping, for example, preserve and beautify the parks without having to take it from tax dollars. And this is something, you know, you have the Escambia Sheriff's Foundation, okay? You have the Escambia Public Schools Foundation. This is a very common practice. It's a relatively new practice in the last, like, decade or so. I don't remember this ever happening before that. And I have definitely an eyebrow raise at this concept because it's government creating a charity by which people can fund a government operation through private money. Because right now you can't just, like, write a check to, you know, the city of Pensacola for parks stuff for $100,000. I mean, it's not like, you know, Qatar that can just give us a plane. Oh, well, I mean, maybe there is a mechanism. I don't know. Anyway, back on the actual subject matter, you know, the idea is to create a charity, and people who want to give to the arts or want to give to helping children or want to give to, you know, plants and flowers and swing sets and playground equipment at the parks. I mean, that's kind of the idea. And I think that's a very interesting idea because what a charitable foundation could be able to do to raise money might be pretty substantial in the private market. And, you know, obviously if they can make enough to offset whatever salaries, or if there are any salaries, I mean, charities typically don't pay a lot, but anyway, it's an interesting idea. You know, that would be a way to raise revenue to pay for the very expensive park system that we have in Pensacola. But one thing worth mentioning, and this is just because it's not something we normally think about, unfortunately, everybody gets excited when we ribbon cut a new facility, a new park, a new piece of playground equipment, a new dog park, whatever. Everybody gets, woohoo, new thing. You should be like, woohoo, what's the cost? Because the cost is not the cost. The cost of the thing itself, the couple million dollars of whatever it is you paid to create the thing, that is not the cost. The real cost is the ongoing maintenance of that thing. There's a very, very good book written, oh gosh, what, 20 years ago by Robert Kiyosaki called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Very popular at the time. And the big takeaway from that book, he's a real estate guy, and the big takeaway from that book is just learning to think about your balance sheet not the way you typically think of it. You typically think of a balance sheet as having assets that are things that are worth money and, you know, things that are, you know, not worth money, okay, things that take money away from or that cost money, you know, debts, essentially, liabilities. And Robert Kiyosaki says, no, that's not how it works. Don't think about, you know, debts you owe and assets you and things of worth value that you have. Think about how much money is coming in or going out every month. So, for example, if you own a home and every month you spend money on that house, that's a liability. If you have a car and you spend insurance and gas and tires and upkeep and also a lease payment or a purchase payment, that's a liability. It's not an asset. Even if it's worth more than you own, it's still a liability because you're losing money every month. On the other hand, if it's generating revenue for you every month, then it's an asset. Well, guess what? Parks are liabilities. and they're not paid for when you buy them. You have to pay for them every year, every year, every year, every, just like roads, okay? Just like, you know, having an airport, just like having gas pipes or electric pipes or whatever, you know, having sewer systems. These are all live, but they all cost money every year. And the problem is that we get excited about acquiring the thing without thinking about the ongoing cost of having the thing. And not to complicate it, but you can also get into thinking about not just financial liability, but time liability. Have you ever bought a thing that cost you time every month or week or day? Because, woohoo, new video game console cost me 4 hours a day. That's a time liability. Now, maybe it's enjoyable, but it's still a time liability. And if you're buying games or rent services, it's costing. Anyway, that's a way of thinking about any infrastructure the government acquires, like a park, that we just don't think about that way. And I think the mayor does think about it that way, and I think we ought to as well. That's why every time you buy a thing in government, it ought to come with several numbers. How much are we paying now? How much will it cost to maintain every month or every year? What's the lifespan? And then what's the replacement cost going to be? Because the real cost of having a thing is the purchase, the maintenance, and the replacement, assuming that you're going to replace it, which you ought to be saving for in advance and not paying for later anyway. It's 525 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, Northwest Florida, Dave Ramsey here. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gulf Coast Air Care. Owner Todd St. Ors and his team focus on the indoor air quality side of HVAC for the people who want comfortable, healthy, and energy-efficient homes and workplaces. Gulf Coast Air Care can help you with dusty, moldy, or leaky duct systems, hot or cold rooms, and odors and humidity issues. So, if you need duct cleaning, duct repairs, or air filtration, you should call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768. They've been trusted members of the community for over 30 years. And remember what Todd always says, if you don't have a good air filter, you are one. Call Gulf Coast Air Care today at 850-934-2768 or visit them online at gulfcoastaircare.com. And be sure and tell them that Dave Ramsey sent you.
Not everyone who handles your personal information is as careful as you are, which might explain why there's a victim of identity theft every 5 seconds in the United States. Fortunately, there's LifeLock. LifeLock will monitor hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. And if your identity's stolen, a U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it guaranteed or your money back. Save 40% your first year with my name, Clay, as your promo code at LifeLock.com. LifeLock, for the threats you can't control, terms apply.
Hey, this is Dr. Ben McMillan. I do a show on the Pensacola Expert Panel. We talk about your health problems.
Let me educate you about the Activator method of adjusting, which offers a safe and effective alternative to traditional manual adjustments. So whether you've been hurt in a car accident or been suffering from back or neck pain, chiropractic care could be your solution and not just a temporary fix.
Join me this Friday on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Why'd I go to the doctor? One day at the firehouse, I was so lightheaded I could barely stand. Even my crew noticed. Getting checked out was the right call. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit NoTimeToWait.com, sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News, 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
You are beaten. It is useless to resist.
Good morning, 529 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Also 95.3 AM 1620 on your News Radio Pensacola app and on 98.7 Digital 3. Is that right? Digital 3? Digital 2. Digital 2. Do I hear Digital 1? No, Digital 2. All right. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. President Trump's meeting with the leader of Syria is concluded yesterday. The White House says Trump met with Syrian leader Ahmed al-Shara in Riyadh. He was joined by the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. with Turkey's president joining by phone. That follows Trump yesterday saying that he would lift sanctions on the country.
Yeah, former terrorist, by the way. I mean, this is a really, really bad guy in history. And we are now normalizing relations, and I don't disagree with this. I'm just saying, really, really bad guy in history. But this is huge. In fact, in the 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock, I'm going to talk a lot about that speech yesterday. Huge speech yesterday. Very poorly covered by the national news. Go ahead, David. What else you got?
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing that, by the way. Scores of evacuations had to be carried out in Maryland because of dangerous flooding yesterday. About 150 students and 50 adults at an elementary school had to be rescued by boat.
Yeah, very scary stuff if you've seen the video, what's been going on the East Coast yesterday. And then there's that that trial of that guy that everybody's heard about that has all the lurid, horrible sex details. And I will not be talking about it. I cannot unread what I have read. I don't encourage you to read it either.
I'm Chris Foster. President Trump in Saudi Arabia announces plans to end economic sanctions on Syria and work to normalize relations.
It gives them a chance for greatness. The sanctions were really crippling, very powerful.
He met with the new interim president of Syria. Bashar al-Assad was overthrown by rebel forces in December. President Trump moves on to Qatar today. Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan, accused of trying to help a man evade arrest by immigration enforcement agents, is indicted by a federal grand jury.
The two-page indictment accuses Dugan of obstructing a U.S. agency and concealing an individual to prevent an arrest. The two charges carry a maximum penalty of 6 years in prison. Dugan's attorneys say she maintains her innocence.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer. Prosecutors say Judge Dugan on April 18th led Eduardo Flores Ruiz and his lawyer out of her courtroom through a back jury door last month. He was caught after a foot chase and she was suspended from the bench. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531. At News Radio 92.3, it is 68 degrees right now. We've got clear skies in Pensacola. Well, some new information on the city of Pensacola's recycling program. Mayor D.C. Reeves outlining price changes and potential start dates yesterday.
We'll be going for once-a-week service. The bills will actually be, if you decide you do not want to opt in, your bill will actually be dropping to about to $24.99 is what we're proposing to the council. And if you are opting in, you'll be charged $32.99.
Reeves also mentioned the city had pushed back a previous price increase. The rates are currently at $27. He says they should be at $29 right now. He said their goal is to get that new opt-in program up and running by July 14th. Escambia County Sea Turtle Patrol volunteers say they've recorded the first nest of 2025 on Perdido Key early on Mother's Day morning. This is the earliest nest recorded on Perdido Key and ties for the earliest nest ever recorded on Pensacola Beach. According to Escambia County officials, May and June are the busiest nesting months for the area. Eggs incubate for about 60 days before the baby turtles venture out into the Gulf. Pensacola police investigating after a shots fired incident in the parking lot of a convenience store yesterday. Happened about 11:30 on Tuesday morning in the parking lot of the 24/7 Mart at Pace and Cervantes. Nobody was hit by the gunfire. So far, police say there's no suspect information. The suspect in last month's mass shooting at FSU has been denied bail. Judge Monique Richardson ordered 20-year-old Phoenix Eichner to remain held without bond and told him not to contact any victims, survivors, or witnesses.
No contact means you can't call, write, text, email, can't contact on social media, and you can't ask anyone to contact those individuals for you.
Eichner appeared remotely in court yesterday from the Wakulla County Jail after several weeks recovering from surgery in a hospital. He didn't say anything. He faces 2 counts of first-degree murder, 7 counts of attempted murder. Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer is arguing that a law targeting undocumented immigrants does not infringe on federal authority. He says it does align with federal guidelines. His office had appealed a preliminary injunction against the law. The appeals court has not yet ruled on a stay. A hearing is set May 29th in Miami to determine possible contempt charges against Uthmeyer. State lawyers argued that he adhered to the order, but he did face scrutiny over an April 23rd letter that appeared to instruct law enforcement to continue enforcing the law. U.S. District Judge Kathleen Williams issued a preliminary injunction April 29th, stating the law likely violated federal authority. Well, taking a look at the Florida citrus forecast, citrus growers are expected to produce slightly more oranges than anticipated this month. with the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimating 11.63 million 90-pound boxes for the season. It's a modest increase from April, but still 35% lower than last year's production. It's 535 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast with Brooke Richardson.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to have a beautiful day today with partly sunny skies, high near 83 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 73. For Thursday, mostly sunny skies, high near 85. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 75 degrees. On Friday, keeping the sunshine around with a high near 86. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, 68 degrees. Our next news at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, and dependable. Let's get a look at our market report from Your Money Now.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Federal safety regulators have asked Elon Musk's car company to explain how its driverless taxis will avoid causing accidents when they hit the road in Texas next month before a national robo-taxi launch. Tesla has been told to provide information on how its taxis will operate safely when there is fog, sun glare, rain, and other low visibility conditions that have been tied to accidents involving the company's driver assistance software. Google is testing AI mode search on its homepage. The new feature, though not widely available yet, is located directly beneath the Google search bar beside a Google search button, replacing the I'm Feeling Lucky widget. The company has been trying to grow its user base as ChatGPT remains more popular. Several over-the-counter eye products used to treat dry and irritated eyes have been voluntarily recalled following an audit by the FDA. AvKare, the pharmaceutical distributor, said the products are being recalled due to manufacturing deviations. Futures are slightly lower. That's Your Money Now.
Hi, this is Terrence A. Gross. Did you know that Florida recently passed a major tort reform package? The legislature reduced Florida's general injury statute of limitations from 4 years to 2 years. They limited attorney's fees and homeowners' lawsuits, which could adversely affect homeowners. For any injury claim, call me, Terrence A. Gross, at 850-434-3333 or visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more. On News Radio Pensacola.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
Well, that is not the sheriff's music. It is now.
You know it's good when there's singing going on.
In oh, I know when we're moving and grooving. Well, of course, but by that standard, your walk up music ought to be Salt and Pepper. So, you know. Oh, here we go. Come on now.
We can't go on together with suspicious minds.
All right. Fair enough. Okay, so Sheriff Chip Simmons is here in the studio with me. He's also the everybody likes to be the DJ. Everybody, which is fine. I kind of like that. So you're a big fan of Elvis? Is that right?
I am.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
First concert I went to, my parents took me to see Elvis in Mobile.
Really?
Yeah. That tells how old I am, right?
A little bit more than 20.
More than 20. 20-ish. 20 plus.
Some news of the week. One thing is you have had a third, or you're still looking for a third suspect after you've had two arrests in the homicide of Andrew Sanders from, what, 2 months ago, a month ago, something like that?
Well, it happened on the 24th.
Oh, okay, so it was that recent. Okay.
Yeah. No, we did pick up the third one, so we've picked up all three of what we think are the killers. So...
What was the incident? Remind me, because sometimes we talk about all these and I do forget some of the particulars.
Yeah, on the 24th, we got a call of suspicious activity, really, and it was witnesses said that one individual got into a car where it's at least two or three other individuals.
Oh,
there was
a
disturbance in the car.
Yeah.
They thought they heard a single gunshot. The next day, our deputies located the car, unfortunately, with the victim's body inside, and our investigators were able to determine who those three individuals were, and all three are being charged with felony murder.
And this is, do we now know, or did we know at the time, you know, retaliation connected with crime, drug dealing?
Drug deal gone bad. The purpose for the meeting was to conduct a drug deal, and whatever happened inside the car was the gone bad part.
You used to work narcotics a long time ago in a former life.
That's true.
How common is that?
It's. I wouldn't say it's over 50%, but there is a pretty high risk, I guess, when you're talking about how serious these things can be. I say it doesn't surprise us.
Okay.
Let me put it that way. And I will tell you that the homicides that we get reported, we talk a lot about it. About 2/3 of them are drug related, and 1/3 are domestic violence related. Of those 2/3, the drug related ones, I call a drug ripoff gone bad.
Sure.
So that's think about that. Those are mostly violence associated with the drug deal itself.
And which is sometimes, you know, home invasions or breaking into the known drug house, trying to rob a drug dealer, that kind of thing. But that can be at their house, that can be in the car, that can be on the corner, that can be...
Yeah, people think it happens in a street corner, and certainly it does happen. In this case, it happened in a car.
Yeah.
But I think there are some, I know in the past that there have been some where, you know, you go to a place and you'll buy drugs and you look around and you'll realize this person's selling drugs and he's got money.
Yeah.
So we'll try to go and do what, like you said, a home invasion or just a burglary. Wait till they leave, and they break into the home and get the drugs. It's a dangerous endeavor.
I mean, if you're going to deal drugs and break the law, why not rob people and break the law? And you know, I mean, it's sort of like when you're in the mindset of it doesn't matter how I get the money.
Well, and the hope is they
violence.
Won't report it.
Yeah, right. Because
they're not dealing drugs. I had $10,000 and a kilo of whatever, and someone stole it from me.
Are we winning?
I think that the efforts
Your agency winning?
I'm an optimist. I think that we are winning. I think if you look at the number of calls, the call volume that we get, if you look at what we're effectively able to do, and we can talk a little bit about a search warrant. But if you look at the number of search warrants that we're executing, what the effect that we're having on neighborhood, and not just the enforcement side but the engagement side, I think that winning is we're seeing some momentum regarding that, and I'm very positive about that outlook.
What would it take? And I'm assuming it's just more of what you've got. But okay, if you are winning in the war on drugs in Escambia County and violence and crime connected to drugs, what would it take to win more? What would it take to really, I mean, be decisively winning in a way that the community would say, oh my God, thank goodness they started this whatever program.
Well, I think that you know, historically we've looked at it through, let's get more people on there, let's give them more pressure, let's make more arrests. We have prioritized, you know, the drug dealers and the mid and upper level drug dealers. And I don't want to just pour money or manpower into a situation. Let's make use of technology. Let's do it wisely so that if we have money available, let's put up another license plate reader, another camera, so that people understand and it acts as a deterrent. Hey, I'm not going to meet someone for drugs right here. And also, if I'm selling drugs from my home, we got this thing called Crime Stoppers. We got this, you know, the sheriff's office is engaging. They're going to neighborhood associations. They're sharing the information. They got these signs that drug house is closed. I don't want to be that person. So let's change the way we do things. Or here's an idea. Let's stop selling the drugs. Let's stop with, you know, the behavior that's going to put someone in jail or put someone, you know, in the graveyard.
I know we're dwelling a little bit, but this to me is really interesting because if you're going to solve a problem, you got to understand the problem. And again, you have a lot of experience working narcotics and, you know, and obviously as police chief and as sheriff. Okay, so we make the price tag of drug dealing high. We make them scared. We deter away from drug dealing. What do they, you know, the argument has always been that, well, they don't have good options. There aren't other ways to make money. They don't have training and education. You know, right, that's always been an argument. And my question to you is, how much truth is there in that? And if you do make the price tag of dealing drugs really high, which you are working on, or make it even higher, what does happen? Because, you know, one thing is they could reform and, you know, take a job as a middle manager and some, you know, whatever. Or, I mean, maybe they go somewhere else where it's easier to sell drugs. I mean, mm-hmm. that pushes the problem elsewhere. It doesn't solve it, but it does push it away from here. In your assessment, you know, what the people who are engaged in this criminal life, how do we get them to be productive? How hard is that?
Well, I you know, you're talking about economics. You know, the more people put in jail, the more drugs we seize, the price goes up. I think that what we're missing here is just a simple truth. They don't have to sell drugs. There are other options. No one's forcing you to sell drugs. No one's forcing you to ignore the laws. No one's forcing you to carry guns and to rip people off and to provide a drug that people die from. No one's forcing you to do that. This is a personal responsibility. And our job, I think, as law enforcement, is if you're going to take those risks and do this to our community, then you certainly will be put in jail whenever we catch you. We will catch you because we have a lot of resources, and we're partnering with the, you know, our resources, matching that with the technology, so that we do have a plan moving forward. We're not just throwing more deputies out there just willy-nilly. We're putting the deputies where the deputies need to be, and we're preparing for the future. So again, I think it's I always kind of cringe when people say, well, what this person didn't have a chance in this, and this mm-hmm. person didn't have a chance in that. Anecdotally, you can talk to a number of people that have found their way out of those situations. Mm-hmm. And have been very successful. But again, it's a personal responsibility. You don't have to sell drugs. You choose to sell drugs. You choose to take that risk, and many times you go to jail for it.
Sheriff, the question of deterrence, sort of most normal people look at, like, the conversation we're having, they're thinking about themselves, right? You know, if I felt desperate, if I didn't have opportunity, would I resort to a life of crime? You know, I mean, that's how human nature is. You project yourself into the situation. But I assume the reality, and I want to ask you this question, is how many people engage in crime because it's risky, because it's thrilling, because it's scary and dangerous and adventurous and whatever is going on? Like, they actually want the thing that you're trying to discourage them from doing. They're not doing it out of some necessity or something like that. Does that question make sense?
Well, I mean, it does, but I don't know that it negates my theory
it,
on...
It doesn't.
You can't... You're jeopardizing someone else's life in the situation that you're in. To include your own family, there have been cases where we've kicked a door in, and the son, let's say, is doing drugs, and the parents live there, and they either don't know or have missed the cues,
and then they
make it dangerous for their family, because sometimes we have drive-by shootings, which again are not random, and then sometimes we have home invasions, as we talked about earlier.
Right.
So I think that, regardless of your desperation, there are plenty of people out there that'll give you the assistance you need, whether it is job counseling, whether it is the military, whether it is something. So you have to make these decisions on your own, and you know, you can point to parenting, you could point to socioeconomics, you could point to a number of things, but ultimately we all make decisions. I wasn't always the sheriff. I wasn't always a police officer. There were times when when I was young and you had a decision to make regarding what you're going to do with your life, and you talked about deterrence. Is it deterrence? Is your deterrent a religious belief, or is your deterrent the fear of going to jail, or is it just not really the lifestyle that you want to live? Do you want more out of your life? And that's why we have the Blazer Academies, the male and the female Blazer Academy, so we can remind them, really. And many of these people have great parents, but some of them do not. So some of them have a situation where they need to hear some of the messaging, and maybe some of that will stick to them.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I am a huge fan of that program, by the way, for all those reasons exactly. Just on the subject, you had another drug house you closed down, a 46-year-old in Cantonment, right? Which is maybe some people think, Cantonment? There's drugs in Cantonment? There's drugs in Cantonment, yes.
Well, it's a nice home. I mean, if you looked at it, the house is in a relatively nice neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, I remember there's a picture on our Facebook page, and it kind of gives you an idea. First of all, a lot of marijuana. Some people will make a comment, oh, it's just marijuana. But if you look at this is not personal use marijuana. Some of it's packaged for distribution. But let's look a little deeper, and what you see there is you see cocaine as well. Mm-hmm. And I talk a lot about nowadays they have a mixture. They do this drug and that drug and that drug. But they have both look like powder cocaine and crack cocaine, which is rare these mm-hmm. days. So, you know, you get a little bit of old school. Someone still knows how to cook the crack or make crack cocaine. And then, again, you look a little deeper and you see what we've been talking about. You see two handguns in that photograph. So we put the sign out there more or less to let the neighbors know, because many times the neighbors will call us and let us know mm-hmm. what's going on. Hey, thank you for the call. You were right. This is a drug house, and it's closed, even if it's temporary.
You have a memorial service coming up Thursday?
Yeah, for the better part of a year now, we have been working on upgrading our memorial to make it more of a focal point at this in front of the sheriff's office. And again, it's the two sides. The first side is the memorial side, and then there is what we call a plaza side, which is stadium seating,
okay.
three or four levels of that. And then there's a star in the middle, and it allows us to better pay the respects to those who paid that ultimate sacrifice. And we will have our memorial on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, right in front of the sheriff's office on Leonard Street. So if you're free and you want to pay respects and you want to see our beautiful new memorial, which is about 95% completed, we should be about 98%. We'll make a couple changes after the fact, but weather should be nice. Swing by and take a look at this memorial. Take a look at the names that are on there.
Mm-hmm.
15 deputies or law enforcement officers and two canines who have died in line of duty serving Escambia County since 1821.
And funded by the Escambia County Sheriff's Foundation.
Thank you. The Escambia County Sheriff Foundation is funded this. There's no zero tax dollars. And then we move the latest memorial up to the Molino precinct. So we still have that one intact, and it's up in the north end of the county in case people want to pay their respects to a little closer to where they may live.
I read a story that surprised me, that the DEA, as of April 1st, eliminated body cameras. And that surprised me because I thought pretty much all law enforcement agencies were going toward body cameras because it exonerates your officers against false claims that get made about them a lot. And they, you know, in addition to serving generally, I mean, you were the innovator of body cameras at PPD. You brought them to Escambia County Sheriff's Office. And, you know, also it tends to calm people down because when they know they're going to be on camera, they behave better a lot of times.
Yeah, they can see it. I mean, we're not hiding the cameras right in the middle of the chest of the mm-hmm. deputies. I really don't understand that. Everyone has their own philosophies, and I haven't read or talked to the individuals that are making that decision. I am a fan. As you said, there are a lot of times that you look at that and say, oh, no, the complaint that I'm getting doesn't match the body camera, doesn't match the attitude. And we're big on three things at the sheriff's office. We're big on courtesy, integrity, and professionalism, and you can see those clearly whenever you have a body camera on. We understand that the lighting and from a camera perspective is a little different than what you would see with your own eyesight.
Right.
And we take that into consideration. We understand angles. We understand all of these things. Well, I also understand that when you fight, a camera falls off, or when it gets
right.
covered up with your arms. We understand all of that. But if you're running an agency, as I am, and you want to make sure that you're open and transparent, what better way than to have both body cameras and in-car cameras? We use it for training a lot.
Yeah.
And again, what we use it to give attaboys. I mean, I
yeah.
was watching one just a couple of days ago. One of our deputies was pursuing a car. The car crashed. The guy got out and ran. And our deputy, to his credit, ran him down and put the cuffs on him and then walked him to that old walk a couple more blocks. It just makes me proud to see every day the job that our sheriff's deputies are doing. And I want our community to know just how good we are.
Yeah, no, for all those reasons, I'm a fan, I'm a supporter too. Last thing, it's a little bit in fun, but I think you'll appreciate this. You shocked me last week when you said that roughly 50% of your deputies, you guessed, had executed a pit maneuver.
Uh-huh.
That you thought maybe about half of them, because I was thinking it'd be more like 15, 10, maybe percent, something like that. And this is partially as a result of a change in policy, and we've talked about this a bunch. But it gave me an idea, which is,
uh-oh.
Have you given any thought to a vinyl badge that you might be able to put on the side of the Tahoe that indicates how many pits that vehicle or that deputy has performed, the way they put it on fighters and bombers and tanks and things like this?
No. The answer is no. I haven't done that. We would rather people just stop. You know, we talk about personal responsibility. Why don't you just stop your car when you see the lights going? Or don't steal the car in the first place.
I just think with the new white paint scheme, it might be super visible. You know, might be kind of a fun little...
No, I haven't given much. I haven't given thought to that. You know, the canines used to do that for every apprehension they made.
Oh, all right, people, yeah.
And I've never been extra a canine. Toy. Okay. But then people are like, oh, you're encouraging them to bite individuals.
Yeah. Hey, it's good play. Is it stickers on the helmet? You know, that's all it is.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't NASCAR. We don't need all the stickers on the cars.
Okay, well, you know, can't say I didn't ask. Sheriff Chip Simmons, this can be kind of Sheriff Chip Simmons. Great to have you. As always, we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you for all you do.
You bet. Y'all take
I just think the red badge of, not courage, I guess, but the red badge of pittage, you know, could go on the side of the car. Could be a shape of a fender. Could be the shape of an inverted vehicle. I mean, I don't know, you know. If you want to discourage people, show them how often you do it. I kind of like the idea. I don't think he's ever going to do it. But, you know, it's appealing to me, if to nobody else. 437-1620, I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. And, hey, if you are thinking about buying a home or selling a home or you just want to get information. And one of the things that, to me about Christina Leavenworth is she's so approachable. She's so friendly. She's so smart. And, I mean, I've known her as long as we've lived here, back to when she was in the news and, you know, started a family. And, I mean, she's a good friend. And now that she's doing real estate. And, you know, when she started doing real estate, I think a lot of us who knew her thought, well, A, if anybody can, you can. But B, a lot of people don't. I mean, a lot of people try real estate and it doesn't really work out for them, or it barely works out for them, or whatever. And then, you know, a couple of years later, she's selling 200 homes a year. You're like, wow, this is amazing. So she and her folks at Levin Rinky Realty do a lot of deals, about three and a half, four homes a week, which means they have knowledge, they have perspective, they can answer your questions and help you make good decisions and help you implement those decisions. Whatever you're trying to figure out when it comes to real estate, just give her a call and ask. 786-3996 or look her up online, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinky Realty.
If my dog Ginger could speak English, you'd hear her say she wants her own doggy vacation at Play and Stay Pet Daycare when I go on vacation. But since she doesn't speak English, I'm going to translate. What's that? Play and Stay Pet Daycare is the only pet daycare in Pensacola with an on-site veterinarian. And they're cage-free with large indoor and outdoor play areas where you love to run and romp with your friends. So where are they? That's right. Play and Stay Pet Daycare is at 4220 North Davis Highway, across from Bailey's Farmers Market, online at olivebranchpethospital.com. Who's a good girl? Yeah.
Is your child getting the personalized attention they need to succeed in math? Hi, this is Adana Elder with Mathnasium. Summer is the perfect time for students to catch up, keep up, or get ahead. At Mathnasium, we offer tailored solutions for learners of all skill levels. We start by assessing each student's strengths and areas for growth, then build a customized learning plan just for them. Your child can join face-to-face sessions online or learn in person at one of our neighborhood centers. We proudly accept step-up scholarships. Mathnasium of Pensacola, Destin, and Niceville, changing lives through math. Learn more at mathnasium.com.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College, for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel this Friday at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them this Friday at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Captain Caveman!
How did Captain Caveman fly, John?
Oh, this is the good stuff, man.
He holds out his club, and the front pops open and takes him wherever he needs to go with whatever device they're using.
I miss those.
I know. It's good stuff, right?
Yes.
558 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. Convicted killers Lyle and Eric Menendez have been resentenced 50 years to life for their crimes, making them eligible for parole. The Menendez brothers have now served decades in prison for the 1989 murders of their parents in Beverly Hills.
You want them living in your neighborhood?
Not necessarily. How about you?
No, thanks. No, I'm good.
Microsoft apparently laying some more people off. This time it'll be 3% of their workforce. They say the layoffs will affect employees across all levels of their company. And the producers of a new hit indie film facing legal action over claims the movie is a ripoff. Actors Alison Brie and Dave Franco are the stars and producers of a film called Together, and a lawsuit filed on Tuesday alleges that it ripped off a 2023 independent film by stealing their idea and scene after scene of their movie.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen this one, and I don't even know the ripoff allegation movie that they're trying to say, so I suppose
it's tough to tell.
It's not like somebody stole a Led Zeppelin song or Led Zeppelin stole another song. It's just not familiar to me, so we'll see. David, thanks so much for the update. When we come back, what did Trump do in Saudi Arabia yesterday? Huge news.